Welcome students for today's session on managerial economics, and today we will be discussing chapter 5, which is demand forecasting. Forecast, which means an estimate about the future. Now you think, we all know that our future is uncertain, so we take the help of certain horoscope, which gives us a foresight about how the future will be, what the challenges are which we have to face. So we try to, a little bit rely on astrology, not all, but definitely some. How will be the day today? What are the problems I'm going to face? Is there any way I can find a pre-solution to those problems, etc., etc. This chapter is focusing about the risk and challenges which the future has for the business firms. Companies are working in a very uncertain environment. They don't know what the future will be tomorrow, or when the product will be launched in the market after a period of time. What the market situation would be? Will there be new companies coming up? Any sudden change in government policies, how will it affect their sales? What about the weather conditions? And most of all, what about the consumer preferences? Well, the external environment is full of uncertainty. Forecasting is just a method of pre-estimating the future, which is highly uncertain, and minimizing the risk. So let us understand in this chapter what are the various methods which have been used by company managers to forecast the future, be prepared for the future, and minimize the risk. So students, let us continue this chapter by understanding what a forecast is. It says, forecast is an estimation or prediction about situations which are most likely to occur in the near or distant future. Well, as I said, we are pre-estimating. A forecast is predicting about the future outcome. Here, we are looking at the risk which a business manager faces, like changing prices, competition, change in the economic activity, like there's a recession, changing of business cycle, government introducing new policies, like recently FDI in retailing, which has been up to 100%. So these type of risk, which cannot be pre-calculated. Hence, a business manager should always make use of certain tools of forecasting to minimize this future risk. There are basically two approaches of demand forecasting. The qualitative approach, where we try to understand what the consumer think, how the consumers plan to spend their money. So it's a direct way of understanding the consumer behavior. And the next is quantitative. In quantitative method, we are making use of statistical method. Most of the approach of using this method would be based on past data collection, past experience, and how a business manager makes use of quantitative and qualitative method in forecasting about the future is what we have to understand in this chapter. It's very important, before we go into the detail of what is a quantitative and qualitative approach of forecasting, we must remember that qualitative approach is very, very useful in short-term forecasting, whereas quantitative approach is very useful in long-term forecasting. So please remember, for short-term forecast within a year, or most probably for a year, is basically the quantitative method. Whereas the quantitative method is for more than a year. So let's understand, students, what is a qualitative approach of forecasting. So students, let us understand the difference between qualitative approach and quantitative approach of forecasting. We would first begin with the qualitative approach of demand forecasting. And as you see in this slide, it is divided into two categories: the expert opinion method and the consumer survey method. The consumer survey method can be done in three of the following ways: complete enumeration, sample survey, end use method. Let us understand each of this method in detail in the further slides. We begin with the expert opinion method. In expert opinion method, The advice is obtained from experienced experts in the field of the product. So you can have the marketing managers, the sales executive, people who have n numbers of years of experience with the research and development department. There is a panel of these experts. They are called by the company, and the issues which the company has with respect to launching a new product or making a new investment plan or product diversification will be discussed among the panels. Now, what has been the problem with this method? There has been a drawback that when there is a panel of experts, it's always that only the few experts are given importance, and therefore there has always been a clash of ideas where only few people are giving importance. So, to overcome this problem where there has been a clash of ideas between the junior and the senior executives, another method which was approached was Delphi method. In Delphi method, we just give the panel a list of questionnaires and we tell them to tick mark. And on the basis of the responses which are collected through this questionnaire, the conclusions are drawn. So, in this Delphi method, as I said, questionnaires on demand forecast for the product are presented to the panel of experts for their feedback. And this feedback is collected and results are drawn. But again, there has been a problem noticed. The different minds giving weightage to different categories, again a problem of coming to a common conclusion. So, when Delphi method is not able to solve the difficulties of expert opinion method, there's only one method which is left, called as hunch method. What is done in the hunch method is, if the responses are different, then weighted average is found to arrive. That means we try to take a general weightage pattern where majority votes, majority of the experts have voted for, and that is known as hunch method. So students, you have to remember that under expert opinion method, there are two methods, Delphi method and hunch method. Delphi method is a method used to overcome the problems of expert opinion method, the problems with related to clash of ideas. To overcome Delphi method problem, which is again where responses keep differing, hunch method is used as an alternative. In hunch method, we try to take a weighted average of all the responses which are collected. Let's move ahead to the next method. The next method is known as consumer survey method. This is said to be one of the most useful and the direct way of reaching the consumer. What is done in this method is, we approach the consumer for getting their feedback with respect to the products that they are using. Like for example, you will find people visiting shopping malls. So at the entry only, people will be given some questionnaires and their feedbacks will be taken. It is also done by the airline companies. A particular airline which you are traveling from, they will give you certain feedback forms where they will ask you questions like, why you selected this airline, how do you like the approach of the cabin crew, how do you like the voice quality and how audible was the pilot, things like that. So these feedbacks are very, very important for bringing any improvement in the existing service, bringing any improvement in the product that the company is launching. So, customer feedback is the most simple and direct method of approaching the customer. Here, we approach the customer using a questionnaire. And when we are using a questionnaire method, following points need to be kept in mind. The questionnaire has to be very simple. It should complete maximum information from the customer. And it should be such that it should be very interesting for the customer to give their feedback. So, when a questionnaire is used to understand buyer's intention, steps like simplicity, completion, covering all the aspects, interesting, has to be kept in mind, and the questionnaire should not be very lengthy or very long. Otherwise, the consumer will be fed up and looking at the form only, they will refuse for giving you any type of feedback. Most of the questions should be in a yes or no category so that the customer is very quick and fast to give the response. This survey which we are going to take from our customer can be taken in three ways. As I said, the very first is complete enumeration. Now, complete enumeration is a very, very lengthy process, because here you not only have to target your present consumers, but you also have to target all the consumers who were using the product or the service before, who are using presently, and who are likable to use it in the future. So if you are planning to launch a product with respect to the services that customers want, with respect to the metro, a project going on in Mumbai, so what type of quality service they are expecting, then it becomes a very long process, because it's not just the present consumer but also the future consumers who are to be targeted. Therefore, complete enumeration is always left to the government department. Government of India is involved in data collection or getting consumer survey on complete enumeration method. Population data. Now the Aadhaar card, yes, also comes under complete enumeration. It's not very, very advisable for corporates to use complete enumeration method. But yes, it is one of the most useful method, especially when Government of India is undertaking survey. It is one of the most useful data collection source for the researchers who are undertaking research in any subject. Second is sample survey. In sample survey, as I said, in complete enumeration, it becomes very time consuming and very expensive. Therefore, an alternative approach is sample survey, where we select only a few respondents from the entire population, and the demand is projected on the basis of response of this sample survey. However, there has to be very, very careful selection of the sample size first. Second, the type of consumers you are selecting. Otherwise, whatever responses have been collected from this sample survey will not give you a close proximity of the total market response. So it's very important that while selecting the sample survey, a very careful check has to be done. A very proper thinking and planning has to be done. It's very important that this method is very useful and 100% result oriented whenever company wants to launch new products, new brands or new services. Next is end use method. When we talk about the end use method, in this we are specifically talking about the products which have several end uses, basically raw materials, cement, steel, where the buyers are not just the ultimate consumer, but companies who are buying this product as an intermediate good, because it is used for further production processes. So what is done in this, if you remember when you were studying the chapter of demand, we had classified demand into two categories: individual demand and market demand. And when we talk about market demand, we say market demand is a summation of individual demand. Well, here we have to use that method which is called dividing the market into various segments. Now the segment will consist of who are the buyers of the product. So if you take example of Ambuja Steel or Ambuja Cement, Ambuja Cement will find out who its end users are. And then they will find out what their probable market demand is for the future. Accordingly, they will forecast how much should be the production and supply. So here, the end users are selected, their probable future market demand or the demand for the product is estimated, and then it is all added together. So we say that demand from all segments are added to arrive at the demand forecast. It is very, very useful only when the end users are 5 or 6, because if their market changes, then accordingly your forecast will also undergo a change. So that was what we covered in the total qualitative methods of forecasting. Now we move on to the next method. The next method is the quantitative approach to demand forecasting. So as you see here, students, that there are 7 methods used in quantitative approach to forecasting. We have to study each of these methods one by one. So we will begin first with time series. Time series method. It is the method which is based on historical data. time series is getting the past data of the company's sales. Once you get the past data of the company's sales, you try to understand what trend that data is following. If the data is continuously increasing or continuously falling, we conclude it as a secular trend. We say the data is continuously increasing at a slow rate. In fact, students, when you are looking at data collection, especially in case of population data or the economic growth of a country, the GDP of any country, definitely time series method is being used. And after plotting that data, we come to the conclusion whether it is in a cyclical fluctuation, which means the ups and downs, whether it is a seasonal fluctuation, that during the peak season the sales go up and during the off-peak season the sales go down, and so on. So in time series, we are purely looking at the past data and trying to understand the fluctuation in that data. You will find, students, that the cyclical variation affects in most of the companies, whether it is consumer durables, whether it is the banks, whether it is the stock market, it totally gets affected with the business cycles. Seasonal variation is basically very, very powerful for companies who are making seasonal products, agricultural output, especially seasonal products. When you talk of umbrellas, you talk of cold creams, or you talk about refrigerators, ACs, they are all purely based on seasonal variations. During a particular peak season, the sales, the demand will pick up. Then there is a slack season. So time series is very useful for the company whenever they want to introduce any promotional strategy for pushing up the sales of the company. Very, very useful for money supply. A particular time period when there is a huge demand for money because of investments, cyclical changes. Random fluctuations are always when there is a strike, a lockout or sudden power failure and the output is zero. So random fluctuations are short-term changes in the data. Even in a stock market, you will find random fluctuations. Even in gold prices, you will find random fluctuations. Exchange rate, our foreign exchange market. So this is where time series method is very useful. It is useful for you to understand the way in which the variables are moving. Now we move to the second method. Our second method is called as moving averages. Like, now you have collected the data. Let's say we are collecting the economic growth data of Indian economy. From that, we will use a method called moving averages. We will look at the past quarter. See what the government does. The moment the financial year begins and a particular policy is implemented, they take quarterly evaluation. Quarter 1, 3 months. So, April, May, June. Quarter 1, they will look at the data. Once they look at the data, then they will evaluate it. That how far the policy has been successful, how well the economy is performing. Then they will go to quarter second. So April, May, June, then July, August, September. Right? September, after that October, November, December, January, February, March. So this is how 4 quarterly evaluation is being done. After 3 quarters, we will take demand in previous N months. That is a 3 quarter data and we will divide it by 3. To get the average, what is the average growth rate? So this is a very useful method for understanding on an average how the company sales are moving. It is known as quarterly evaluation. And on that basis, predicting what would be the likable growth in the next quarter. The third method, students, is known as exponential smoothing. In exponential smoothing method, we are giving weightage to the most recent data. This is only because when the data is not following a secular trend, like for the past 2 quarters, industrial growth was at 3% and suddenly in the quarter 3, the growth rate crossed 8%. So we will give weightage to the most recent data. So in exponential method, weightage is given to the recent data only and only if there is a wide fluctuation between the past data and the current data. Index numbers. Index numbers is basically used for calculating the inflation rate. There are two index numbers, consumer price index and wholesale price index. What we do in index number is, we give weightage to base year. Base year value has to be taken as 100. So suppose now we are in 2012. 2011 will be my base year and I will assume base year as 100. Then I will look at the current year prices of vegetables and the quantity sold at the wholesale rate and at the retail price. And on that basis, using a formula which is known as Lesparre's price index. Lesparre's price index mein, we take current year price P1, multiply with current year quantity Q1, divide it with base year price P0, base year quantity Q0, and then multiply it by 100. If our answer comes as 113, then I say that there is a 13% increase in the prices compared to the base year, because base year is taken as 100. Using a formula of Lesparre's, I come to the current year value. If it is 113, then I say there is a 13% increase in the prices. So index numbers are very, very useful, especially for calculating the price index, that is the inflation rate. It is called as index because you are trying to give weightage to a particular year and the prices. So students, we move ahead to the next method of demand forecasting, which is regression analysis. Now, in regression analysis, we are basically trying to measure the cause and effect relationship between two related variables. How is X related to Y? It is like understanding whether the correlation between the two variables is positive or it is negative. Now, look at this example. Annual repairs expenses of ACs can be forecasted if we know the age of air conditioning machines. Whenever companies are manufacturing products, they are always trying to understand the technical correlation between the durability of the machine, the chances of repairs coming in the machine, so that the after sales service, the length of after sales service can be pre-planned. So this plays a very, very important role. Positive correlation. If the annual repairs increases, then accordingly the age of the machines can be correlated with that. To give you a very simple example, what is the chance that with the increase in price the supply will be increased? Is it positively correlated? So please remember that in regression analysis, certain correlation variables are brought together. And for example, if there is a remote manufactured by a company, what are the chances that mishandling of that remote will lead to technical damage? Or if you take an example of a refrigerator, in a refrigerator, you can see that refrigerator which runs on electricity. What are the chances that if there is a sudden increase in the electricity due to, in rural areas, a sudden increase in electricity with a volt of electricity going up, how much will be the pressure on the compressor? Is there a system where the automatically the compressor will stop working? So these type of correlations can be built up in all type of manufactured products by the technical engineers, and where regression analysis is very, very useful. The next method is econometric models. Now, in econometric models, we again try to explain the cause and effect relationship. But like in regression analysis, we were only looking at correlation between two variables. But when we want to study the relationship between more than two variables, one a dependent variable and many other independent variables, then we will prepare an econometric model. Like demand for a given product functionally depends on price, income, taste, population, price of substitute, price of complementary, etc., etc. And on the basis of that econometric model, we try to understand how much will be the impact on the sales if there is a change in any of these independent variables. Let's say Tata Motors. It will prepare an econometric model for its cars. So it will say the demand for cars will depend on first the price per car, second the income of the consumer, third the price of petrol, fourth the interest rate which the bank is offering, credit facilities, fifth the age group of the person, then the condition of Indian roads, etc., etc. That means all those factors which can have some major or minor influence on the sales of cars will be taken into consideration. They will be statistically analyzed to understand how much will be the impact on the sales of cars if any of these factors undergo a change. So this is very, very useful for forecasting the future demand with the change in any of the interrelated variables. So please remember, this method is very analytical and it is a very process oriented. It throws light on the problems which are theoretical and statistical in nature. The last method in demand forecasting is input-output analysis. It is based on a set of tables that explains the interrelationship among various components of an economy. Here, students, we try to understand the close relation between one industry, which is a seller of cement, and another industry, which is a buyer of cement. So what happens when there is a slack demand from the buyers? How will it affect the sales of cement for a company who is a supplier? Input-output model is a mathematical matrix where you try to understand and you try to bring together all those industries which are interdependent. One industry's output, another industry's input. That industry's input will determine the output of some other industry. Bring them together and try to understand the trend in which the sales are changing. So, with that, we have completed the quantitative and qualitative method of forecasting. The methods which are available are time series, exponential smoothing, regression analysis, input-output analysis, moving averages, index numbers, econometric models. However, there is no unique method, one method which you will use for forecasting demand. But whenever any method is selected by the company for forecasting, following points should be remembered. Objective, why the company is forecasting. Data availability, how easily they will get the resource. Urgency, if they want quick forecasting, then they should never use method where there is a long process of collecting the data. Resources allocated, also the time and the money involved. And the nature of the product. Is it a consumer good? Is it a manufactured good? And so on. A good forecasting method will follow the following conditions. It will be accurate, reliable, economical. Data availability will be very easy. It will be flexible, which means when need arises, the forecaster can make changes in the forecasting method. And durability. Simplicity basically means where it's very easy for the team to understand the method of forecast and accordingly collect the data in a minimum time and give close to accurate estimates. See, we know one thing, that no forecast is 100% accurate, but the best forecast is the one where the estimate and the accurate the results are very close, the difference is very close, where the estimate and the accurate, the actual results, there is not much gap between that. There are many methods because it's just a forecast, it has some limitations. Survey method has been found to be simple, But a drawback is that it may be very subjective. Sometimes the consumers may not give you honest replies, and that will affect the accuracy of your forecast. The surveys are expensive, and if the samples selected are not properly planned, then it will make a very inaccurate result. Time series is basically based on only historical data. So you can only rely on the data which has already incurred. There is a difference between field experiments and laboratory observations. However, without forecasting, we cannot take uncalculated risk. So business totally depends on forecast, and these methods have been found to be very, very useful in forecasting the future. So with that, we have completed the chapter 5 on methods used in demand forecasting. Thank you.